Welcome to Coffee Talk with your host, Linda Richman.
Welcome to Coffee Talk. I'm your guest host, Linda Richman. Now, I don't know from coffee. It gives me spilkes in my connectigazoink. And it aggravates my hiatus hernia. So this week's show is dedicated to the best entertainer in the history of show business, Barbara Streisand.
Well, sadly, we don't have Barbara here in the studio, but you may remember the famous SNL sketch, Coffee Talk. This is not Coffee Talk. It's Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Suzanne Hogan. It's pretty safe to say that coffee is like a life fuel around the KCUR studios. At least speaking for myself, I know I look forward to my morning cup of coffee from the moment I open my eyes, hardly able to speak to anybody before I get my first taste. In the afternoon, I have to get at least an espresso shot, or in the summertime, an iced toddy to make it through the day. Am I a caffeine addict? Probably. In light of local barista Pete Licata of Parisi Coffee snagging first place in the World Barista Championship last week, and mine and the station's ongoing addiction, we thought it might be a good time to talk about the role of caffeine in people's lives, the cultural and scientific impact of the world's most commonly used psychoactive drug. Our guest today is Bennett Allen Weinberg of worldofcaffeine.com, a website that presents scientific and cultural information about caffeine. He and Bonnie K. Beeler co-authored the books The World of Caffeine, The Science and Culture of the World's Most Popular Drug, and The Caffeine Advantage. Bennett Allen Weinberg, welcome to Central Standard.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. So, Bennett, I am a shameless caffeine addict. What is it about caffeine that gets people so hooked?
Well, first of all, I wanted to point out to you that you're not a caffeine addict.
Oh.
Caffeine is not an addictive drug, and this is something, an error that a lot of people make. As a matter of fact, Bonnie and I made it when we published our first book. Hmm. We said that caffeine was addictive. Because a lot of people do say that, and they're speaking very loosely, but a lot of scientists contacted us and said, that's not really true, and you better correct it. And when we looked into it more deeply, we found out that they were right. You see, an addictive drug, or any addictive thing, like gambling or any other addiction, is defined as something that causes serious damage to your life, but which you're helpless to stop. That's what an addictive drug or an addictive behavior is. So, for example, some people get addicted to heroin and they can't stop heroin and their lives are ruined. The same thing happens with gambling and with other things. However, with caffeine, nobody ever lost his job, his wife, his house, because he couldn't stop using caffeine or had some problem with caffeine. It just doesn't work like that. Now, caffeine does create a metabolic dependence. But many, many drugs do that. Prozac, for example, creates a metabolic dependence. If you're taking Prozac, you don't want to stop taking it suddenly. You want to taper off it. But that doesn't make it an addictive drug. So really, we should clear this up because it's people speak loosely and say it's addictive. But really, what it does create a metabolic dependence. And if you're using a fair amount of it, if you want to stop, to avoid any possible discomfort, you should taper off your use of it. And that's basically it.
So that must have been kind of startling news to find out that it was not indeed an addicted drug, but it is a psychoactive drug. And what is a psychoactive drug?
Well, a psychoactive drug is a drug that affects your way of thinking, feeling, and the way your mind works. That's what a psychoactive drug is. And, of course, caffeine is a classic psychoactive drug. There's no question about it. And if you don't, for example, if you don't like the idea of using it, if you have some religious objection to it, well, you should not use caffeine. But if you have no particular personal problem with it, then it happens. It's a wonderful thing. If you can use it, it's a wonderful thing to use. And I have many reasons why I say that.
Oh, what are they?
Well, caffeine has many, many, many benefits. One benefit that, well, first of all, to me, the most important single benefit of caffeine is its mood benefits, I feel. I mean, to have something that makes you feel better, happier, more optimistic, more energetic, and that doesn't hurt you, is a pretty rare and wonderful thing. Now, amphetamines, cocaine, can make you feel stimulated and make you feel better, but they'll end up killing you, ruining your life. So that's not a good way to go. But caffeine really is a beneficial thing to use, and it does so much. And that's why people smile when they walk by Starbucks, because they remember the feeling that caffeine gives them, which is a good feeling. And as little as 100 milligrams of caffeine in the morning has been proven in Johns Hopkins studies to improve your mood for the entire day.
But then again, there are people that don't handle caffeine well. And what are some of the side effects that pop up that kind of point out to you that maybe caffeine usage is not a good idea for you?
Well, by the way, before I answer that question, can I just say that you asked me what the benefits of caffeine were. There are a lot more benefits than just mood effects. Obviously, it has tremendous health benefits, some of which are so startling and strange that it's hard to believe them, and I'm not going to list them all now if you want to talk about them later, but it tremendously reduces the risk of stroke, high blood pressure, heart attacks, diabetes, many cancers, tremendous effects on reducing disease entities. And it also has tremendous benefits in health maintenance. It helps us to relax and our moods, as I mentioned, but it also prevents muscle soreness. It helps you exercise better. It also protects your brain from senile dementia and Alzheimer's. It has a tremendous number of benefits, so many that it's almost hard to believe. Now, you were just asking me, can you repeat that question?
Well, obviously, there are a lot of benefits, but there are some people that just don't handle caffeine well. And, I mean, what are signs if you want to be a coffee drinker, you want to be a person that can consume caffeine, but really it's just maybe not for you?
Well, that's a very good point to make, and it is true. The basic secret for understanding how to use caffeine is to see what it does to you. Now, just as an example, there are some people who can have a big cup of coffee at 11 o'clock at night and go to sleep at 11:30. There are other people that if they have a coffee at 1 in the afternoon, they won't be able to sleep. Now, who's right? Which one of them is right? Well, neither one is right. The point is you have to know what it does to you or for you. So really, this is the critical thing. And people do respond differently. Some people are very sensitive to it. Some people can use a lot. Some people can, if they use even a little bit, it's too much for them. So you really have to determine this for yourself. And the truth is that if, for example, one of the major effects that caffeine can have to disturb people's lives is it can interfere with their sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if it interferes with your sleep, even if you just have a little in the morning, it looks like you might not be able to use it. And I would say that's a shame, but that's life. Most people can use it. Most people don't have that kind of problem. For most people, it's a question of how much.
Right.
But for a few people, any is too much. So it really does depend on you. And if it affects your sleep, if it makes you nervous, makes you jittery, if it causes a heart arrhythmia or something, well, then you probably want to stay away from it. But that only applies to a relatively small minority of people.
This is Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM. I'm Suzanne Hogan. We're talking about the scientific and cultural impact of caffeine. Our guest today, Bennett Allen Weinberg, and his partner, Bonnie K. Beeler, co-authored the books The World of Caffeine, The Science and Culture of the World's Most Popular Drug, and The Caffeine Advantage. Do you think you're a caffeine addict, even though our guest here today says you cannot be addicted? Do you have a caffeine dependency? Any questions about caffeine, give us a call, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Email us at centralstandard@kcur.org or tweet us at KCURCST. So, Bennett, where was caffeine first discovered?
Well, that's a very tricky question, where it was first discovered. Actually, probably the first source that we can identify and prove historically is in cacao beans, from which chocolate is made in South America and Central America. It is known that the Olmecs, who were a tribe of Central American Indians who used caffeine, and they were around before the Mayans, around 1000 B.C. They were using caffeine, so we know that. As far as other sources, the major sources, obviously, are coffee and tea. And tea's origin is uncertain. We really just don't know when it began. But with coffee, we have a mystery, even though we do know when its use began. And it really is a very interesting story, I think, if you'd like me to
briefly. Let's hear it. That was my next question.
Oh, okay. Well, so coffee, the most popular drink in the world, by the way, is tea. And second is coffee. But coffee is the greatest source of caffeine because coffee has more caffeine in it per cup of what you drink than tea.
And how much is that about?
Well, this, again, is a tricky question. There are two major kinds of coffee, Arabica beans and Robusta beans. Arabica beans are the better beans. They're the gourmet beans. They're the beans that are really good and flavorful and subtle and, you know, just a real treat. And they would have about 150 milligrams of caffeine per 6-ounce cup of filter drip coffee. The confusing thing is that Robusta beans, which are the cheaper beans, which are used in a lot of instant coffees and a lot of cheaper coffees, has twice as much caffeine as that. So a 6-ounce cup of Robusta beans has 300 milligrams of caffeine. So it really does vary. And the reason that Robusta beans are cheaper is because they're more resistant to disease because they have more caffeine. You see, caffeine originated in this world as an insect killer, as a microbe killer, as a protector of plants. And that's basically what it is. And all of its benefits to us are kind of a weird accident. And it arose as something to protect plants from bugs. So Robusta beans that have more caffeine are cheaper to grow because they're easier to protect from contamination and disease. But they also don't happen to be nearly as pleasant. So those are the two major kinds of coffee, Arabica and Robusta. I'm sorry, I forget the rest of your question.
Well, we were talking about where coffee originally came from.
Yes. Well, there is a real mystery about coffee's origin. I think it's kind of interesting. Coffee really appears in the world pretty suddenly in the Middle East around the year 1500. And by 1511, there was a coffee house, a coffee shop, a cafe opened up in Mecca. And that was the first known coffee house, cafe. And within about 100 years of that, it had spread throughout the entire Arab world. With another 100 years after that, it spread everywhere in the world. The mystery is, where was coffee before this? Now, as it happens, coffee grows indigenously and naturally throughout Africa. It's everywhere. It grows across the entire continent. And it always has since prehistoric times. The question is, why didn't anyone apparently encounter coffee? Egyptians don't mention coffee. The Greeks, the ancient Greeks, were quite familiar with the tribes in Africa, knew the names of the little villages and so on. They don't mention coffee. And nowhere in the Arab world or in the African world is coffee mentioned by anyone. It just suddenly appears around the year 1500. And there were some pretty smart and careful Arab historians at this time. And when they saw coffee becoming popular, they made an inquiry into where it came from. And there were still people alive at that time who remembered when coffee was unknown. But nevertheless, they were unable to actually trace back where it had appeared from, whether it was first found growing in the Yemen, or first found in Ethiopia, and then it crossed the Red Sea, nobody really knows. We just know it suddenly appeared, and once it appeared, it covered the world in almost no time. So it is quite a mystery. Where was coffee in the ancient world? Where was coffee in the early medieval world? We just don't know.
And do you have any sense of, was it coffee in the form that we know it, brewed in the same way that we know it today, or did they use different ways of consuming it?
It wasn't brewed exactly the way we use it. I mean, the coffee was originally made a very strong brew, and they would crush the beans up and boil them. And that makes a kind of a bitter, murky drink. But it makes a drink that imparts a lot of caffeine and that some people can enjoy the flavor of. Other people just don't like the taste but enjoy the effect. So, for example, if I can give you another strange example, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Royal Society of England, but that's one of the greatest scientific societies in the world. Well, not too many people know that that began as a coffee klatch. In Oxford, in the middle of the 17th century, some scientists, artists, architects, poets, got together. They were exposed to coffee. It was not widely sold. It was not something people knew about at this time. It had just appeared in England. And these men got together in Oxford, and they convinced a pharmacist named Tilliard to prepare and serve coffee to them once a week. And they did this because they wanted to have the benefits of the caffeine from the coffee. They didn't like the drink. It was very bitter. It was very murky. But these men, these most of them were very brilliant men, did feel that the caffeine stimulated their mind, their understanding, and their thinking. So they created this coffee klatch. After a few years, they moved it to London, and they got a royal charter, and they renamed it from the Oxford Coffee Club to the Royal Society, and that became the Royal Society. So it began, and it really, it was kind of like, you know how the drugs were used by Timothy Leary at Harvard and LSD and all that stuff in the 60s? Well, in a sense, this really was drug use by these early scientists and authors and philosophers and so on. It was a kind of, by these intellectuals who felt that they were benefiting tremendously by using caffeine. They were real mavericks.
Well, Bennett, how has the role of a barista or coffee shop kind of changed over time then? We go from this Royal Society to, you know, now you can get coffee all around the world and there's barista championships. I mean, how has it changed?
Well, it's changed largely in that it has spread out and become almost a universal thing. I mean, at this time I'm speaking of with the Royal Society, coffee was unknown in England, except in a handful of people knew about it, really. It wasn't sold. It wasn't sold in coffee shops or even in they started selling it in pharmacies at the beginning. Hmm. And then finally, people developed a taste for it. And once they did that, there was no looking back. It just spread around the world into every community. It's virtually something that you'll find everywhere on Earth today.
Bennett, we're going to take a call, if that's all right. I'm sorry to cut you off here. We've had Anne, who's been waiting on the line patiently. Anne in Prairie Village, welcome to Central Standard. She called 816-235-2888.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering, I just came from a health institute that was a raw vegan, and their concern about coffee or caffeine is that it makes the body too acidic. And I can explain what they said real quickly if you don't know what the problems are with acidity levels in the body. But I was just wondering if you've heard that and what your thoughts are, because I love coffee, and I came back from there trying to quit, but it's like, I can't remove all enjoyment in my life, you know, sugar, caffeine, you know, and everything. What are your thoughts, please?
Well, my thought would be that the people trying to scare you about using caffeine and trying to induce you to quit are doing you a real disservice. If you can't tolerate caffeine, if it keeps you awake at night and you just can't use it, well, I consider that a shame.
But Bennett, I've read too that drinking coffee is bad for things like PMS, yet there's caffeine and a lot of painkillers that treat PMS, like Midol and even ibuprofen. Is there a difference between the acidity in coffee versus the caffeine that's in these medicines?
Well, this acidity question, all the many years that I've studied this and read peer-reviewed double-blind studies, I've never heard of that, so I can't really comment intelligently on that. But as far as PMS or caffeine is the strongest non-prescription painkiller available in the world, and caffeine alone kills pain as well or better than ibuprofen, which is the real name for Advil. And it kills pain better than Tylenol and aspirin. And even better yet is to combine caffeine with aspirin or Tylenol or ibuprofen, which is best yet. And most people don't know this, but it really is a very powerful painkiller. If you have a toothache and you take a caffeine tablet, the chances that your toothache will go away are just pretty significant. And if you bump your knee or hurt, or you make your muscles sore from exercise, caffeine is what the strongest analgesic you can get, apart from a prescription narcotic.
Bennett, we're almost out of time, but I want to quickly get to energy drinks. Energy drinks came around a little bit later on in the time of your research for these books. How has the emergence and popularity of energy drinks kind of changed your look at caffeine and caffeine dependency?
Well, it hasn't changed it at all, except to make me think that people just don't know what they're talking about, frankly. Energy drinks have a relatively small amount of caffeine in them. All this brouhaha over it is simply stuff and nonsense. To illustrate this to you, a typical energy drink, now they vary, of course, but the most popular ones and typical ones have 10 milligrams of caffeine per ounce.
So coffee, is it sugar then?
Well, just a second. Okay. Coffee has between 25 and 50 milligrams of caffeine per ounce. So if there's some problem with the level of caffeine in energy drinks, we should all be dropping dead from drinking coffee. I mean, it's an absurdity. In other words, there's far less caffeine in a so-called energy drink than there is in a cup of coffee.
Well, Bennett Allen Weinberger, I'm sorry we're out of time. We didn't get to nearly as much as I wanted to, but thank you so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Bennett Allen Weinberger and Bonnie K. Beeler co-authored the books The World of Caffeine, The Science and Culture of the World's Most Popular Drug, and The Caffeine Advantage, and are responsible for the website worldofcaffeine.com. Tune in tomorrow for Central Standard as we look at solar power and the state of our local fountains. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and myself. Our interns are Claire McInerney, Ross Steinmetz, and Sangeeta Shastri. Up to Date is next with the Harvester's retiring CEO. I'm Suzanne Hogan, and this is Central Standard on KCUR. Enjoy the day.